Thank you, everyone. I'm just going to get started while it's getting loaded. I wanted to provide a little background. First of all, I wanted to say that based on Larry's presentation, American Indians are definitely wits. They open among the Lakota, one of the phrases that they start all of their ceremonies with is "Metakwiasing," and that means we are all related. And so today I'm going to talk a little bit about the American Indian population. And I just want to say I'm a clinical psychologist by training, and this isn't my area per se, but all of these factors certainly come into play in the work that I do. And also I think you'll see that influence of clinical psychology and that perspective on the presentation today. So usually I lament the lack of literature on American Indian populations and health-related issues. But in this case, you don't have to look far to find the disparities in injury, risk, and mortality among American Indians. The literature is fairly replete with examples of ways in which American Indians suffer disproportionate rates of injury, risk, and mortality. And as I was preparing my presentation, being mindful of the 15 minutes, I was getting really anxious because each slide was getting really full and I had to keep inserting new slides to get in all the information. So I'm going to try to move through this quickly. But this is really just, as I'm sure all of our presenters today, really just going to touch on issues. And so my goal is to not dwell too much on some of the statistics, but I wanted to open with those and then move to trying to contextualize those in terms of modern day context for American Indian communities as well as historical context. So there's about 4.5 million American Indians in the United States. That counts American Indians who list themselves as American Indian only as well as American Indian combined with another race. That's about 1.5% of the population. This population is very diverse. There's over 550 federally recognized tribes in the United States. These are all parts of larger tribal groupings such as the Lakota, the Ojibwe, the Cherokee, the Navajo, for example. But there's incredible diversity with respect to culture and language and also histories of colonization. But of course, they share commonalities as well. And so when I present the data I'm talking about today, it's really just an overview of the American Indian population as a whole, but it's really important to remember that there's incredible diversity between tribal communities on all of the indicators that I'll be talking about. There are as many urban Indians, native people who live in urban centers around the country, as there are American Indians living on reservations. I think even over half of the native population is urban. But there aren't a lot of data on urban populations. And so the data that I'm going to talk about today really don't speak specifically or maybe at all to urban populations. It's definitely a gap in the literature. American Indians face incredible economic disparities. About 25% of the population is living in poverty. And again, this is an overall rate. And it's much higher among certain groups. For example, among the Lakota, it's about 40%. And if you look at specific reservation communities, it's going to be even higher than that. Shannon County, which encompasses the Pine Ridge Reservation in South Dakota, always ranks among the poorest, if not the poorest county in the entire country. There's greater unemployment, and these are rates just for those looking for work who cannot find it. This doesn't necessarily count the people who've given up on looking for work entirely. And there's also lower education, and those are the figures there. American Indians, a lot of these figures are from Indian Health Service data. So they face a number of health disparities. These are deaths due to these various conditions, tuberculosis 8 times, alcoholism, and that's different from chronic liver disease and cirrhosis. So these are alcohol-related deaths, like alcohol poisoning, alcoholic polyneuropathy, are about 6 times the national rate. Chronic liver disease is 4.2 times overall. And if you look among certain age groups, for example, among 25 to 44-year-olds, it's about 8 times diabetes, pneumonia, and influenza. The age-adjusted death rate is about 23% higher, lower life expectancy, and a larger percentage of deaths occur among younger people in this population. And again, I won't keep saying this, but it's really important to remember the variation that's going to occur between different tribal communities. So in terms of injury risk and mortality, motor vehicle deaths, are about 3 times the U.S. rate, firearm injury, suicide, and homicide. I'm going to kind of move quickly through these because I want to talk about some important gender differences as well as age differences with respect to these rates. And according to the National Crime Victimization Survey, American Indian people have the highest per capita rate of violent victimization, more than twice that of any other group. So I want to talk a little bit about some of the gender differences, and these probably parallel gender differences in the general population as well. But men are at greater risk for motor vehicle deaths, deaths due to firearm injury, suicide, homicide, and alcohol. And you can see some of the comparisons there. And given the work that I've done, I haven't really had a chance to talk about that, but these are some of the most troubling statistics to me. American Indian women, and there's been a lot of relatively speaking, there's been some attention to these issues lately with some documentaries that have come out, some series of articles. One was in the Denver newspapers here, and anyway, trying to address this. But American Indian women are at greater risk for intimate partner and sexual violence, certainly compared to men, but also compared to women from other groups. About over a third experience intimate partner violence in their lifetimes. That's about 2 to 3 times that of other groups. They're about 2.5 times more likely to be sexually assaulted than women in the general population. And 1 in 3 will be raped during their lifetime. And these are likely underestimates due to the number of cases that go unreported. And when I talk about some of the structural issues that surround this, you can see why these cases go unreported. I want to talk a little bit about some of the issues that affect Native youth. So I was getting really, really depressed when I was preparing this presentation. But these are some of the issues that affect Native youth. Higher rates of infant mortality due to these various causes, sudden infant death syndrome, accidents, and homicide. But it's important to remember with respect to infant mortality that these still represent a minority of American Indian children. That these rates are still very low, but they're greater than they are in the general population. There's higher rates of child abuse, more than double the rate in the general population, and in some areas as much as 10 times. This was from the National Child Abuse and Neglect Data Survey. And retrospective accounts by adults indicate that rates may be far higher than that. And again, you know, these are really going to vary. These rates of 77% based on adult recall, that was from one particular tribal community. And so among older American Indian youth, again, motor vehicle accidents exceed the U.S. rate by about 3 times. Suicide is attempted by about 1/4 of the girls and more than 1 in 10 boys. And completions for girls and boys are 2 to 3 times those of many other groups. And homicide and accidents also exceed other groups. So youth are also engaging in significant injury risk behaviors. Drinking and driving, about 40% of youth in one survey, riding with a drunk driver, about 20%, and never wearing a seatbelt. Among Native youth, the other thing to think about is how much they're witnessing violence in their families and communities. And so when you look at the overall rates that are happening among the adults, it's really important, certainly from a psychological standpoint, the effect that the this violence is having on children, even if they are not directly victims of those kinds of things. Certainly what goes on in their families and the kinds of things that they're witnessing are very important to their development. And I'll present a little case example and a little bit of just a little anecdote of how that can affect a person. So gender differences, and again, these are just some highlights. This is not an exhaustive list, but physical and sexual abuse are higher among girls, and suicide completion are higher among males. Again, that's probably similar to the general population. Okay, I got to really hurry now. So I wanted to talk a little bit about the social context of injury risk and mortality. So it's really important to think about the comorbidity of alcohol, of these injuries with alcohol and mental health. 65% of fatal crashes are alcohol related versus 47 in the general population, and almost half of drivers in fatal car accidents had a blood alcohol content of greater than 0.01. And again, that's compared to 30%. I'm going to skip over some of these other things, but again, among American Indian youth who attempt suicide, more have histories of depression, arrest, alcohol abuse, family substance abuse, and discrimination. So you really can't take these injury risk and mortality figures out of these contexts of what's going on in terms of people's mental health. When you get to, and these also happen in communities that are very deeply connected to one another. And so injuries and deaths that are visible are very visible in Native communities. And anyone who's spent time, at least in some of the communities that I've been in, there's always a funeral, and people are taking off work and offices close, and it's a very visible sort of thing that happens in these communities. And in certain tribal communities, there's these clusters of suicides that tend to happen among the youth. And so when we look at some of the structural factors and from a social justice perspective, the Indian Health Service is severely underfunded. They fund their patients at about $1,900 per year compared to about $3,800 a year in prisons. They operate at about 59% of the amount that they need to provide quality care. Mental health and substance abuse services are just 7% of this already underfunded budget. And according to one analysis, there's only 2 psychiatrists and 4 psychologists for every 100,000 people in the American Indian population, compared to about 14 and 28. And so when you think about the comorbidity, certainly with alcohol, I mean, this is a huge gap. And access to existing services, the limited services that are there, people wait a long time, they have to drive long distances to get to these services. There's also confidentiality concerns. Communities are very small, and people see you coming and going from mental health, and that's a real stigma. And there's also a perception, whether it's true or not, but I've heard it many times, of people's personal confidential information getting leaked to other people. And then there's just the conditions of poverty. When you think of cars, the maintenance is going to suffer. People are often living in very rural settings where the conditions of roads are not kept up well. I've driven in many whiteout conditions myself, and you go vast distances without seeing any services or any other cars. And so you think about what that's going to mean if you go off the road and you have an accident. It could be a while before anyone is there to help you. And a lot of cars also don't meet current safety standards. You see a lot of older model cars that, certainly in terms of infant car seats, don't have the same protections that we have in newer cars. And housing, there's a lot of housing shortages, which means that the condition of homes that people are living in suffer. For example, sudden infant death syndrome, there was a study among American Indians, and as we all know, layering of infants with too many warm clothes is one contributing factor to SIDS. And so if you're living in a house that's not heated or heated poorly, and you're really covering up your baby to keep him or her warm, that's a condition of poverty that's going to contribute to that higher rate of SIDS. In terms of law enforcement, local resources are stretched very thin. You have very few law enforcement officials covering vast expanses of land, again, in these very rural areas. Also, significantly, major crimes are investigated by the FBI, so things like murder, rape, child abuse. And there was a study that 47% of cases that were referred to U.S. attorneys for investigation were declined. And as a result, justice is seldom served. And in this context, victims are not inclined to make a report because nothing happens. And when they do make a report, they may face further victimization because people in the community, there's retribution against them for making that report against a relative or something like that. And I probably have to wrap up. So let's see. Very briefly, you cannot take what's going on today out of the context of historical trauma. There were 5 million American Indians at the time of first contact. There were about 250,000 remaining in 1890. They've lost incredible expanses of land. There's been virtually no treaty that's been unbroken. And certainly loss of culture through various government policies, such as relocating tribal people from their reservation homelands to cities, having religious freedoms curtailed, and the history of boarding schools where Native children were taken against their will often to go to missionary-run boarding schools and to be civilized. So this was just a quote I came across and I thought it was important. So I want to end on some positive notes, the next steps. So the Indian Health Care Improvement Act was permanently reauthorized. That was part of the Obamacare bill, though, and I'm not sure what this will mean for this. But anyway, there are increased resources for law enforcement on reservations. 35 new assistant U.S. attorneys and 45 new FBI agents have been assigned. Funding for tribal courts and law enforcement will increase by $180 million in 2011. And there's the Tribal Law and Order Act of 2009, which it would allow tribes to impose longer sentences and prosecute some of the crimes themselves. As a psychologist, I want to put my plug in, the support for early intervention and prevention. There is a tribal home visiting program that's just come out through ACF. And so, for example, some of the studies on home visiting found that nurse home visiting before or after birth was associated with an 80% less chance of SIDS. This was in an American Indian sample, so I think there's really a need for that. I feel very strongly about mentoring and supporting Native scholars to have a voice in this discourse and to weigh in on these things. And I think there's a lot of support that needs to happen for Native scholars to succeed. And I think communities themselves are working to address these issues through the maintenance of their cultural practices and taking, for example, in my experience, a proactive stance toward partnering with outside groups such as researchers. And that's all.